This is Renovating Masculinity. To become authentic, great men, we must intentionally build ourselves to be a place of safety and protection for others.
Each week, JT, Anthony, and myself, Chris, will challenge you to rethink old habits so you can remove thoughts that hinder you and replace them with actions that strengthen you as a man.
So let's get to work. Well, gentlemen, how we doing today? Everybody's good?
Yeah, man.
Good morning.
Man, last episode was starting to get pretty deep.
I know. We pushed Chris.
Man, have you heard a man talk so much on a podcast?
I warned you.
He had another hour in him for sure.
All those edits and still.
I got an extra pot of coffee today, so I'm really, you're going to have to slow me down.
Here we go.
Yeah.
You know, you did end, you know, the last, you talked about the wounds and the effects of the wounds.
Yeah.
There's a statement or something that we say quite often is that anger, because you talked about anger and addiction, mm-hmm. right? Anger is a way a son expresses the pain, where addictions are a way to suppress the pain.
Mm-hmm.
And now let me just warn the listeners, sometimes it's going to be lighthearted and we're going to have a lot of fun, but there are some issues that us as men deal with that are more serious because of the effects of the wound. Mm-hmm. And that father wound is a serious, serious wound.
It's a monster.
Yeah. It may be the biggest.
Yeah.
It may be the biggest that we as men deal with. So again, we're going to be jovial and we're going to have some fun, but I do think that this is just one of those topics that we need to take seriously and be sober-minded about, and so we don't want to make light of it, because we know a lot of guys out there. Over the years that I've been doing this, I've met with thousands of men at this mm-hmm. point, and I can take most men back to this issue,
mm-hmm.
and it's the start of the process.
Yeah,
and I want to talk real quick, because you brought it up, Chris. The anger part is such an outward expression.
Mm-hmm.
You're angry with your kids, you're angry with your wife, you get angry easily at the job site. It's like you're walking around a ticking time bomb, just waiting for somebody to hit that wound. And when they hit it, you explode.
Yeah.
The other addiction, we know that you can numb a pain by alcohol, drugs, sex, pornography. You know, there's all kinds of things that you can hide from the wound. Food is another mm-hmm. one that you can hide from the wound because you numb it. The problem with numbing a pain is that it's not selective. So you don't have selective numbing.
Ooh.
So while you're numbing a pain, you're also numbing the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps you in a state of not ever moving forward.
Stagnant.
It's just, and we know that stagnant water stinks.
Mm.
So
and things grow and mold and junk,
it's nasty. So we hope by this conversation today that you can move forward, and let's open up some floodgates and let some fresh water come in, so to speak.
Yeah.
By listening to our own stories. And that's why, you know, again, us sitting around is just a small sample of what we encourage you as our listener, as men, to get a small band of brothers that you can be open and vulnerable with.
Mm-hmm.
And because this is where we start, the water starts moving.
Yeah.
Because we're listening to each other and identifying something. And I can identify with something that Chris shared last week. It's like, man, I dealt with that. You know, or I thought about, have I dealt with it?
Mm-hmm.
And today we're really going to push Anthony.
Yay.
He is so excited about this.
Yeah.
But I will say this real quick about Anthony. He is a great dad.
Hmm.
I've watched his kids. I've watched them grow up. I've known Anthony for, how long have we known each other? What year?
16, maybe.
16.
16 years.
So I've watched his kids grow up. I mess with his kids all the time. I'm always...
Hey, girl.
I'm always messing with his kids. So, but I know that that didn't come because Anthony had a great example.
Hmm.
And that's where the admiration comes in. because I do believe that Anthony is a walking example of someone who has dealt with the wounds. Not that he's dealt with all of them, but he's dealt with them as they've come, and he's had healing, and the outcome is his kids and how healthy they are.
Yeah.
Not that he's done everything perfect. I can spend a whole podcast on what he's not done right, but that's not why we're here. But anyway, on that, did you have anything that you wanted to say?
Well, yeah, let me flip the script, because he got to ask me, so I get to formally, right?
Here we go.
So, Mr. Anthony, why don't you, I'm excited because I don't know as much about your beginnings as JT does. So what was your relationship like with your father?
And there you have it.
About like that. No. Okay. No, but really seriously, and I'll probably go pretty deep pretty quickly, and I haven't thought this out, but, you know, I do want to go back to something you said, Chris. You said, you know, the behavior that the wound causes, you know, the forward behavior in a man that a wound maybe when he was 6 or 8 caused, and I really want to flesh that out, and that's the way I'll introduce my father. Mm. I can remember being about 6 years old. And I'm in my room and I hear my father's voice. And, you know, even thinking back now, I didn't run out of my room. I wasn't excited that he had come over. And he was out speaking to my mom. And I remember my mom making the suggestion of, hey, can you give me some money to buy Tony a jacket? It's getting cold. He doesn't have a winter coat. And his response, like, catapulted me into 20, 30 years of behavior. His response to my mom was, well, he never calls until he needs something. And I'm like, man, and I can remember thinking this even at the time. I'm like, I'm freaking 6 years old. Mm. I don't call you for anything. My mom needs you. You're never around here, and she asks you for something, and then you blame it on me. Like, I'm literally thinking this through in real time, and it made me say something. It made me make a promise to myself at about 6 or 7 years old that I regret. In that flash of a moment, I said, you know what? I'm never going to ask anybody for anything. Hmm. I'm never going to ask anybody for any help, because nobody will be able to look at me and tell me and try to rub it in my face that I needed some help. Hmm. And that catapulted me through a life where I tried to do it all on my own. I did it legally at times, illegally at times, anything that it took to avoid asking for help or needing something from somebody. But I remember I walked away from that moment at 6 years old with a ton of resentment from my father.
That's what we talked about last week. That anytime there's a trauma, there's a lie. Mm-hmm. Mm. And you actually told yourself the lie. I'll Absolutely. Never need anybody. I'm never going
to
ask.
And even if I perceive that I might need them, I'm still not going to allow them to help me.
Right.
Because you're going to have weight over me. You're going to have something to lord over me. And I'm never being in this position again.
Yeah, jeez, wow. That's 6.
That's 6 years old. God.
So here's, now I'll back up. So my father is currently alive. And I would hope that one day that he would listen to all of these. And we are, our relationship right now, if it were a scale of 1 to 10, as far as peace in the relationship, man, I'd put it at a 9, believe it or not. And I'll probably tell you a little bit how we got there. But I can tell you this, that there's nothing that I'm going to say in the following few minutes that I didn't say straight to my dad's face. Mm. Because I am a guy, I don't know where it really came from, but I see a value and confronting things and saying them like they are. And I think I do know where it came from. It came from having no control over what I said and then getting a chance to see some fruit, negative and positive, and just being able to work through that and have a confidence that here's something I always tell guys, and I don't want to get off on a rabbit trail. I feel like you can say anything as hard and direct as it might be if the heart condition is right, and that you're saying it for a couple of reasons. One is, do you want to make that person better? And the other is a reason that you're not saying it, or you're just trying to make yourself feel better and get it off your chest. Because I feel like that people in my life, and I tell JT this all the time, that I don't need a bunch of loose friends around me. I need men with weight that will come and tell me a thing that's right or wrong. They won't watch me and my issues and stay quiet. I don't have time for those loose kinds of friendships. I like deep, intimate, weighted relationships.
Yeah,
it's the thing that I thrive off of. So back to my father. I said all of that to say that there's nothing that I'll be able to say here that I didn't say to my father's face. Mm-hmm. So what was my father like? What was our relationship like? I remember that, I don't know the exact age, but I'm going to say 3 was when my father was no longer in the house. And I was raised by a great mother, a mother that had to take on the demeanor of a father in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to stop and say something that's going to get us in a lot of trouble, JT.
I love it already.
And I'm going to tell you right now that speaking about my mother, but speaking about a mother in general, I really don't care how great of a mother she is. I mean, the greatest mother, this statement is going to get me in a lot of trouble. The greatest mother cannot be a father. I don't care how good she is. I don't care if she was at every game. I don't care if she showed you how to drive and tie a tie or whatever she showed you. The greatest mother that there ever was cannot be a father. And there is a specific thing that a father holds in a boy's life that only he possesses. And if he is not there to impart it to a son, then it just doesn't get imparted.
Yeah, and to not smooth that over, but I love how you said the greatest mother, because you can be a great mom.
Absolutely.
I know a lot of single mothers that they try desperately to be everything to their children. And man, it's really unbelievable to watch.
Yeah.
And most that I know are incredible.
Absolutely.
But there is that God did not build you. He wasn't the architect to put maleness in a female.
Right.
And there is that weight of a father that only comes from a father. And that's not a dig on the moms.
No.
I mean, obviously, you know, it's not taking anything away from them. It's actually a dig against fathers. Where are you at?
Yeah.
To give your son what only you can give him,
mm-hmm.
or your daughter. Where are you at? And if you leave it all to the mother to do, and I'm just saying, shame on you.
Yeah. That, and the thing about it is, what's great about a mom, she's going to pick it up. Whatever you drop, whatever you leave laying on the ground, my mother picked it up and mm-hmm. she ran with it. And yeah. I mean, we made touchdowns. So that's not the statement I'm making. I want to be clear about exactly what I'm saying and for you to hear it, that the greatest mother in the world, she can't be a father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I intimately believe that. I just believe it. So I'm 2, 3. My father's left the home. I don't know when. I don't see much of him, but I see him from time to time. And each time I see him, he's got a different lady with him.
Mm.
He's always dressed very sharply. He is a good-looking guy. He wears a hat, one of those old-style hats that you pull to the side that fold down in front. I don't even know what you call them. But, I mean, he's a good-looking playboy kind of guy. And so that was one example, even from afar, that he taught me. Every time I saw him, he was with a different girl. So that was imprinted on me.
Mm.
So that was one trait that I picked up very quickly. He was also a guy, I'll give it to him, that he had a job that was, at the time, I think it was one of those premier jobs for a black father. He worked for General Motors.
Mm.
And so he was looked at with some, I don't know, honor because of the job that he held in a time when a lot of people weren't able to get those kinds of jobs. So he did that. But as far as an influence or time spent, the only time that I remember being with him was if he'd come pick me up for a couple of hours. And then if he did, we'd go maybe by one of his girlfriend's house and spend 30 minutes there, and she could pinch my cheeks and go, "Oh, he looks just like you," and stuff like that. So very surface kinds of relationship. You know, and I know that we want to talk about our dads in honor. I will tell you this. He's got some cojones, because about 7, 8 years ago, I get a phone call from my mom. And my mom says, "Hey, I'm coming down to visit." And I go, "Great, Mom, when are you coming?" She tells me, and she says, "I'm bringing somebody with me."
And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm thinking one of her friends, one of her girlfriends. She goes, I'm bringing your dad. And I go, you're not bringing my dad to my house. Mm. And she goes, I'm bringing your dad. And I go,
yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Jeez. So, you know, 3-4 days go by, man. I'm like, what's this going to be? So she shows up. They walk in the house. I see this guy. I'm like, it's like looking at myself. I see my features in this dude. Mm-hmm. I haven't spent any time with him. I've got years of anger. So he sits down on the couch and like literally in my household, like everybody's scattered.
Wow.
Like everybody is gone. And I'm on the couch looking at my dad and I just go, I hated you. I hated you, dude. You made my life hard. You didn't teach me the things that every other boy had a father to teach him. Tying a tie, asking a girl out, changing the oil. You didn't teach me anything because you weren't around. You were too freaking busy doing other stuff than to be around me. You really pissed me off. And I just went on in that thing, everything I could think of. Because I needed him to know what he did. Mm. And I can remember him telling me something that melted me. He said, you're right. And the longer it was in between times that I came to see you, it made it harder for me to come back. Mm. Because I felt guilty. Mm. And so the way that I paved over the guilt is I let the span of time be even further. And then it got to a place where I never came. Mm. I could identify with that. Because the longer between times when you face a thing and you run from it, it gets more comfortable to run than to go and face it.
Avoid, yeah. Ooh.
And so he said that. And again, I tell you guys, I'm a pretty simple dude. I look at him and I go, actually, I get that. Mm. And I think I'm good now.
That diffused almost immediately. Just you getting everything. It out and wow.
It cleared a clear landing, a place for us to like take off again. Mm. And we sat and then I guess they heard it get quiet. So they felt like maybe we should go check. Has he strangled him? But people begin to appear out of nowhere.
Filtering back in.
Mm-hmm. Hey, what y'all doing? What y'all talking about? And, you know, he's still kind of wide-eyed. And I'm like, I'm great. Man, let's talk. And so he stayed. And I don't know the right version of this. I think it was 3 or 4 more days. And during that time, man, we had a great time. Mm. And before he left, I even was able to call him dad because up until that time, I called him Arthur.
Wow.
Oof.
And, you know, that's kind of how the reconciliation part came. Now, in between there, honestly, I can't give you a real example of who my dad was. Having learned a bit about him now, I know that he didn't have much of an example himself. I know that he was set off on a course where he put a lot of value in the way that he looked, the way that he dressed, the job that he had, and the women that he could accumulate. Mm. And so I understood that. But I will tell you this, we're talking about father wounds. So him having been absent and then me gleaming things from the edge, so to speak, mm-hmm. through moments that I might see him, it built a thing in me. It literally built my masculinity. Mm. So I was a guy that didn't ask for any help from anybody. I was going to make money any way I needed to do what I needed. I was definitely not going to be a one woman kind of guy. Mm. I used to pride myself on my honesty, air quotations, that I never told a girl she was the only one. Mm. And as a matter of fact, I made sure to tell him that she wasn't the only one. So I was okay. You know, having more than one.
Yeah.
You just basically said, you're just one small vegetable in my pot of stew.
What are you
guys? Hey, but now back to reality. I mean, but so and again, I told you that I'm not opposed to putting my blooper reel out there. I'm telling you that I was a despicable guy.
Yeah,
I had a lot of characteristics that you would look into a man's life and go, "This is a despicable example of a man." I had no value for women, or the way that I treated them, collected them. Even I would say, I used to think that it was pretty funny that the middle dash in one of my cars was literally full with small pieces of paper with girls' phone numbers on it, like hundreds.
Wow.
I thought it was this funny thing. And I would meet girls later and they would say, "You never called." And I go, "I don't even really remember getting your number.
What's your name?"
It was a game.
Yeah.
So, but again, I'm not telling you it's his fault. I'm telling you what the result was of this relationship and the things that I gleaned.
Yeah.
So it set me off on that path. And then, you know, it was one other thing that really bothered me about my father. I knew that my mom was left wounded. And I began to hear some of the stories about his behavior towards my mom. And they were, some of them were violent or physical. And so I mentioned this in another podcast, that a lot of times if we identify a thing that we perceive as negative in our fathers, that we'll run 1,000 miles from that. Mm. And that was one time that I made a decision that I would never hit a woman. Mm. I would never be violent towards anyone. I would never lay my hands on a woman because I don't want to be like this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I mean, that's a good thing.
Positive, yeah.
That's
yeah.
a good thing. But other than that, JT, I mean, I don't have a real deep backstory other than just this past Father's Day. I called my father, and he was like, "Oh, man, I'm so glad you called." And I'm like, "Me too, man. What's going on? Happy Father's Day. And what are you doing?" And he's got CPOD.
Yeah.
Is that yeah, are those initials?
That's a thing.
Yeah.
And just make up initials because yeah, it's out there.
It's if you out,
just,
some, yeah, somebody's out got there it.
Just make it up.
And I'm like, "How's your health? You know, and you're not getting out in this COVID thing." I mean, had a good conversation. We were on the phone 15, 20 minutes. And I won't tell you that I call him once a week or once a month because I don't. But when I call him, man, I don't feel any angst when I dial the number. Mm. I'm not hoping that he doesn't pick up.
Yeah,
I'm excited when he picks up the telephone. And he's excited, man. And I remember one pivotal moment, and then I'll probably give this to you guys because I know you need it back. But I remember talking to him and sitting on his couch, and he looked at me and he goes, "Man, so you're the boss at that place?" And I go, "Yeah." And he's saying, "You've been there how long?" And I told him, and he's like, you got a relationship with your CEO and VP and all that?" And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "Man, at first, I really didn't believe you. Mm-hmm. But, man, you did good. I'm really proud of you." And it took me 40 years, you know, to get that. But it still mattered.
Yeah. Mm.
So I'll encourage followers right now. I mean, it's never too late to fix it. Mm. It's never too late to step up and go, "All of that stuff that you said I did, I did. And even if you didn't know that I did it, here's some other stuff that I did to you." Mm. And I did it all. And I did it because I was stupid or selfish. I didn't have the tools to actually do it correctly. But you know what? I see it now. Can we move forward? Mm-hmm. And so that's what I said as well, that I'm not going to lay all the pressure on the son, even though if he gets to a place where he's healed and he's able to go back and gather it himself. But that father, it's never too late for that father either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To go, "You know what? I've been a bum, or I didn't do it well, or there's some things that I could have done better." And go to your son and say, "I did this." And I'm telling you, that son is open and willing to go, "Man, Dad, thank you. That's okay. Because I get it. Because I'm trying to be a dad myself right now. And I know how hard it is."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Oh, that's awesome, man. Thank you for that. I was kind of wondering, I don't know how much time we got left in this moment, but one of the things I wanted to ask you and both of you, but I kind of want to start with you, Aunt, because we're still on you. But since you are a father now and have been for a while,
yeah,
what's one phrase that you hear when you talk to other men, or is there a phrase or some kind of tone that reveals a lot to you, almost like is a flag of, "Ooh, I don't think he's dealt with"? Is there anything that you kind of hear consistently where you're like, "Yeah, man, you really need to good or bad, and not necessarily bad, but I think there's sometimes I hear people talk, mainly just in vulnerability. If they can be vulnerable about their dad, that tells a lot of like, oh, man, you just went there right away. You're obviously not – you've handled a lot of that, you know?
Yeah, I guess one thing that really piques my ears and that I haven't been able to really wrap my head around is when you're talking to a guy about his family in general or specifically his kids, and he goes, man, I can't wait to get away from them. Man, they're loud and they're doing this and they're always that. And like, I just cannot connect to that at all because all the confusion and frustration and in my way and way too loud when I'm trying to work, man, I love it. Like, I literally love it. And I just can't understand a father that doesn't, he's not able to see the value and the fleeting opportunity that it is to have these loud, rambunctious, in the way, question asking,
just
chaos. Children around him. Yeah, chaos. The chaos. Yeah. And so I always, when guys say that, I go, are you serious, man? I never let it go by.
Yeah.
And I go, why don't you like, and I say it like this, why don't you like being around your kids? Oh, I'm not saying that. Well, what are you saying? Because if I'm the wrong guy and you tell me that, you justify a thing in me.
Right.
So
right.
I go, oh yeah, I'm not the only father that feels that.
Can't stand my kids.
Yeah, but that's not going to fly. You had those kids. You said yes to those kids and you have a responsibility. You don't get to opt out.
Right, right.
So I don't care how you feel. I want to know why you don't like your kids.
Yeah.
And some of those have turned out poorly.
Yeah.
But some guys have gotten real and said, well, here's where I'm at.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's because they're not equipped to be with their kids. They don't know how to relate to their kids. Kind of like your father, maybe.
Yeah, or they just don't realize the seat that they hold.
That's probably true.
You know, that to me is the bigger thing is that, and it sounds a little dramatic to say how often I see fathers abdicate that and step out of that seat, because a lot of times it is unintentional or they're unaware of how much, but it's just a neglecting, obviously sometimes straight up neglecting their children, but then there's also this subtle like, as long as I'm in the room, as long as I show up to the games, that's me being present and me fulfilling my role and missing out on the depths of like your seat of authority is so much bigger and deeper than you're giving it. There's a lot more nuances to what you're doing and not doing.
Yeah.
That's impacting so much of your children.
Yeah.
But it takes a lot of courage to call that out or listen to people who call it out in you if you do have somebody.
You know, one thing I was thinking, Anthony, while you were talking.
I promise you I'm not angry.
No, you're not angry. And I've met your dad, too. So,
yeah.
I did think you kind of bragged on yourself a little bit without really knowing it because you always said that your father, you know, was a good-looking guy and all that. But then he walked in and you said, and I saw me.
See all
my
features.
Yeah. It's like, man, Anthony just said, I'm a good-looking guy. I mean, you know, I mean, your wife thinks so.
Yeah, that's all that matters, actually.
But, you know, as you were talking, I was just, sitting here thinking, you know, for the most part, dads don't hurt us on purpose.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like your dad gets up in the morning and says, you know, how can I really screw up my kid today? Mm-hmm.
Yep, right.
You know, that's just not the thought process and what you said about your dad, the passivity in the ignoring of confrontation, or not even confrontation, but just being in the same room and everything that brings out of what he has not done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
the guilt.
The guilt, the shame. Because I think every father really knows that he's not done.
Yeah.
Or at least has a pit in his stomach that, yeah.
Yeah, because you're reminded of it when you're asked, hey, can you buy my son, like you're, you know, hey, Tony needs a jacket. You know, and his first response was where he doesn't call me. You know, that's a revealing of something.
Yeah.
That's much deeper than just buying you a jacket.
Right, right.
You know, so I think that, you know, moving forward, I mean, we really have to give, and I know this is difficult, but we have to give our dads the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And we have to find that place of compassion. And again, we're going to continually say this, that you have to take the first step sometimes and putting them in a place where you're not holding them in a box or in a time capsule and allowing them to journey life themselves as well.
Yeah.
And giving them a place to maybe talk about what they've learned and their regrets.
Mm-hmm.
I know that any father over 50, just because I'm a father over 50, when you hit 50, there's a reflection that comes. And you do reflect back on life. And there is a, what have I done right? What have I done wrong?
Mm.
And I think if we give our fathers, especially us older ones, space and the ability to know that I'm a safe place. And yeah, I may go off on you for a minute just because there's anger and pain in me like you did.
Brokenness, yeah.
And brokenness. But I'm willing to get to the next level, but I've got to be heard first.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And it's not just a bashing, just to bash
right.
for bashing's sake.
Right.
It is to move forward. Like, again, going back to something you quoted, you know, last episode about the healing. That's a place of healing, is that you allow your father not to stay in that time capsule, but let life's lessons and what he's learned in life
mm-hmm.
Give that space for him to say that.
Can I put a bow on this?
Yeah.
My ability to father right now is a result of not being afraid to confront the things that I didn't get from my father.
Mm.
So I just want to say this, that at some point, if you want to be healthy, you're going to have to get to a place to be able to look into whoever it is that is causing you grief, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a boss, whether it's a father, to be able to find yourself in that person and admit to yourself that you have some areas that are completely broken and flawed and are inflicting pain on somebody. Because when I sat down with my father, and even before that, I had begun the process of going, there's this old song and it says, don't blame Mr. Charlie. Mr. Charlie's just a man doing the best he can. That's my singing debut.
Wow,
I can't believe I just did that.
Yeah.
But
we can't just, either, by the way.
Yeah. It's just saying, man, don't blame Mr. Charlie, man. Mr. Charlie is doing the best that he can. And I really do have that perspective towards people that do things to me.
Yeah.
Because I go, man, you know what? That really pissed me off right there. But maybe the dude, I always say this, leave room for ignorance.
Yeah.
Leave room for stupidity. You know, there's a lot of other things and people just trying to affect you and trying to hurt you. So all of that to say this, man, when I look back at my father and his behavior and our current relationship, like I don't have like a shred, believe it or not, they invoke passion in me when I talk about it, but I don't have a shred of hatred or a shred of anger still towards him. I just have abounding grace to look back over his life and just suppose, because I don't know the whole story, but just suppose that he wasn't well cared for by his father or by his community, and that he probably just did the best that he could.
Mm-hmm.
And I acknowledge that, and I love him for it. And I think that there's an opportunity for every relationship with a father and son to be healed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just believe that everyone can be healed. Now, it's going to take some pushing and pulling and some words maybe that you don't even know that you still use, possibly, and some real frank communication. And it's going to take one thing above all, is the decision to forgive.
Mm.
You don't feel like you want to forgive. You decide to forgive. And I decided to forgive him. And, I mean, it's flourished. And I have a great relationship with he and his new wife and all of that. So...
Mm. That's great.
There you go.
Well, I will say this, man. You'll never realize freedom from your past until you let your dad go.
That's good.
You'll never realize the freedom of your past until you let your dad go. Because you have to realize that he's just a man. He's a wounded man.
Yeah.
That wounded another man.
Sing the song, JT. Can you sing it?
I don't know who Charlie is, and I'm not singing that song. But as we conclude, I would say, if you're a son wounded by your dad, be courageous, take courage and strength, and seek out reconciliation. Whatever form that is, whether it's a letter whether it's a sit down over coffee, if it's a phone call, whatever it is, we're asking you to at least start the process, because your future and your destiny and your purpose depend on it.
Renovating Masculinity is hosted by Chris Terrell, Anthony Flemons, and JT McCraw. Produced and edited by John Fender, Jonas Litton, and Ben Delameter at Lasting Media. To learn more about how to rethink, remove, and replace unproductive mindsets, visit renovatingmasculinity.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook @ Renovating Masculinity and Twitter @ Reno Masculinity.